This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Christopher Cruz. The United Auto Workers say they'll continue to put pressure on the big three automakers until they meet their demands. Union President Sean Fain on CBS's Face the Nation.
They chose to wait till the last week to get down and start talking, to get serious about this, and that's where we are now. And if we don't get better offers and we don't get down and take care of the members' needs, then we're going to amp this thing up even more.
The strikers say they're determined to force the automakers to increase their pay. More on that from CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
I'm here for the long haul. If I have to be out here, rain, sleet, snow, thunderstorm, tornado, striking.
I don't think they're honking for the CEOs.
And they're getting the backing of high-profile Democrats. Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman joined the picket line, while Vermont's Bernie Sanders headlined a huge rally just feet from the Detroit Auto Show.
It is totally reasonable for auto workers to finally receive a fair share of the record-breaking profits that their labor has produced.
There's a lot of bad news in the latest CBS News poll for President Biden.
It's the economy.
Nearly half of voters and most independents say they are worse off financially than before the COVID pandemic, far more than, say, better off. And this is not helping Biden. Three-quarters of independents who feel they are financially worse off are backing Trump over Biden.
CBS News Deputy Director of Elections and Surveys Jennifer DePinto says age and health also top the list.
By almost 3-1, voters think only Trump and not Biden is physically healthy enough for the job of president.
Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
And Trump continues to blame China for COVID.
What happened to this world, not our country, the whole world, what happened with COVID, and it just shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened. What happened, what China did to the world was so bad.
Trump spoke on NBC. A 14-year-old boy has been arrested after police say he shot and killed his mother in Riverview, Florida last night. Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister.
The scene behind me is one that nightmares are made of.
Deputies say the boy repeatedly placed the weapon to his head. He was arrested after a brief standoff. The woman's boyfriend was found inside a home several doors away. He'd been shot in the hands and face. He's been hospitalized. Television host Drew Barrymore today announced she's delaying the return of her show planned for tomorrow after strong criticism from striking writers and actors. She says she'll wait until the labor issues are resolved. Her show resumed taping in New York last week and was picketed by striking writers. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A new poll suggests impeaching Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz is an unpopular idea with voters. Mike Moan reports.
A Better Wisconsin Together, a left-leaning research group, is out with new survey results showing that Wisconsinites oppose impeaching Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz by a 24-point margin. The poll was released the same day Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced he's putting together a panel to look at grounds for removing the judge. A Better Wisconsin Together's Mike Brown says, based on the election and the survey, such a move goes against the will of voters.
Wisconsin voters value their votes, and they expect that their legislators will respect the results of those votes. The impeachment proceedings threatening to overturn the election are very definitely in opposition to what a very strong majority of Wisconsin voters feel.
The poll of 600 registered voters, conducted by a national firm, was essentially evenly split in connecting with Republicans and Democrats. Voss and other Republicans have floated a possible impeachment over opposition to comments Protasiewicz made on the campaign trail regarding redistricting. Brown notes that any misgivings about what the judge said prior to the election don't carry much weight.
The Judicial Commission, which oversees and enforces court ethics, has already dismissed several baseless complaints brought by state Republicans against Justice Protasiewicz, and they declared the matter closed.
Also from the poll, 46% of Wisconsin voters think any effort to remove Protasiewicz is driven by political motivations among Republicans based on the election results. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bowden.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm, built for real life.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Auto Glass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Auto Glass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Auto Glass Now today for full details.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Hello, friends. I'm Lou Ann Bird of Bird on a Wire, your host for this podcast series along with Civic Media. Welcome. We're very glad you're listening. Today, I have a good friend that I met when I was campaigning. I knocked on her door, and she has a very powerful story to tell about some of her life and some of the things that she was concerned about. And by the time I left her door, she said, I want you to put a great big sign in my yard. And so we had a big bird sign in her yard during the campaign. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself. And then we recently have connected over some issues with at the Whitnall School Board, which we'll tell you about in a minute.
Yeah. So I'm Sarah Blonsky. And like you said, you came knocking on my door. I think you were campaigning for Chris, actually, not yourself.
Oh, both. I was at door for both.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you
started with me. Yep. And
And so we just met that way. We got talking about some of the issues and we clearly aligned. I'm very passionate about equity and representing marginalized communities, abortion rights, and basically all things keeping people have their rights and be respected.
So tell you, you were very concerned when I first met you, right? That was right after Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Oh, yes.
And you had some health challenges, and this was going to change. This lack of access to an abortion affected your ability to have a family. Yes. Tell us a little about that.
So I have been pregnant 4 times. But I only have 2 living children. The first time I was pregnant, I was very excited. Each of my pregnancies was planned. I was lucky to not be in a situation where I had an unplanned pregnancy. But at 12 weeks, when I went in for my first appointment, because that's how my doctor's office did it, I did not find a heartbeat. They didn't find what they thought they were expecting. And at that time, they thought, maybe you have your dates wrong. This is a common thing in the miscarriage world. Maybe you have your dates wrong. And so then I waited a week and went back, and I had what's called a miscarriage. Basically, my body didn't know what was going on. So I still had a baby inside me, but that baby had no heartbeat and was not growing. And so I needed to do something about it. I couldn't just let my body figure it out. It wasn't doing that. So I ended up actually having an abortion, because the medical word for it is DNC, but a DNC is an abortion. And if I hadn't, I could have had an infection, which can turn into life-threatening. It can affect your fertility. So I had the DNC, and then we tried to conceive. It took us quite a long time, and then I got pregnant with my son. Again, I had more checkups and everything. And I did decide to do genetic testing. It was kind of a funny thing because I didn't know about genetic testing at that time. I was only 27 years old. I hadn't really had the best education about maternal health care, even sex ed. I grew up in a very conservative religious family. So I didn't talk about genetic testing. So I'm like, what do you mean this first trimester screen? What should we do? And they just said, well, it's an extra ultrasound and a blood test. Because I was a lost mom, I heard ultrasound. I'm like, I need to see that baby. You're going to give me a free ultrasound. Well, insurance covered ultrasound. And I was like, sign me up. Unfortunately, when it came back, well, and I guess I shouldn't say unfortunately because I have my wonderful son, but it came back and it was high risk for Down syndrome or trisomy 21. And so my doctor said, well, we're probably scaring you. We get these high risks and it usually doesn't mean anything. And he's like, well, you can have another blood test, which is 99% accurate. That would be the maternity 21, often called the NIPT, the non-invasive prenatal testing. Or you can do a CVS, because I wasn't pregnant. I wasn't far enough along to have an amniocentesis. A CVS happens prior, but okay. It's similar procedure. There's a slight increased risk for a miscarriage with it, but the way it's explained to me is that they're very good at them and they just keep getting better at them. The risk was very minimal. For me, I needed to know. I needed to know what was going on. I couldn't go through my pregnancy wondering the anxiety that would cause. I needed to know what was going to happen. And I wanted my child's birth to be an exciting time. And I didn't want to have this hanging over. What does he have Down syndrome? Does he not have Down syndrome? At that time, I didn't know he was E, but so I did the CVS and it came back positive for Down syndrome. So my son was diagnosed with Down syndrome at about 13 weeks pregnant. At that point, you then get a lot of conversations about how do you want to move forward. Their abortion was brought up multiple times. For me, that is not a reason that I would terminate. For some people, that might be. There are a lot of health complications that can go along with Down syndrome. And I think if there had been more health complications, I might have considered it. But I did go out throughout my pregnancy. I had him early. I had some complications. The prenatal testing honestly saved his life, though. If I hadn't had the prenatal testing. Because sometimes prenatal testing is complicated. People are like, they shouldn't do it because it's just for abortion. It's not the case. It informed his care. If I hadn't had prenatal testing, I wouldn't have known that he wasn't growing. I would have had less ultrasounds. And he had something called reverse flow, where he wasn't getting enough nutrients from the placenta. And if they hadn't found it, they know he would have passed away within a week. So.
Wow. Wow.
So prenatal testing saved my son's life. So I had him. His life has been very complicated, but that would be a whole nother podcast of talking.
Yeah.
My next pregnancy, I waited quite a while because of his health complications and just wanting to make sure I was ready. Because of my childhood, I firmly believe that you should always be ready to give the child everything they need. And so we waited a while, and my son was four when we decided to try again. And it took a while for me to get pregnant because we were kind of trying, not trying. And I have a little trouble getting pregnant. I got pregnant with a daughter because I decided to do the NIPT because, again, prenatal testing saved my life. I'm going to opt for it in every pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And everything was going great because of my son was high risk because I had him early. We did some additional screenings. And then at 20 weeks, I found out she had a very significant complication. Her complication doesn't have a great name. I think now that I'm like here, I'm forgetting what it's called. But basically, the gist of it is when she implanted, some of the cells didn't implant correctly. So she wasn't getting enough blood flow from me to the placenta. And so then the placenta was very, very small. Is actually a tenth of the size. And then 1/10 of that very small placenta also died. So she was only had like 90% of her very small placenta working. That was during COVID. It was right after COVID hit. It was March 2020. I got pregnant. So I think this appointment was in the end of June, maybe July. And it was really, it was the first appointment my husband was allowed to come to. They just decided that husbands could come to the anatomy scans. And so he was there. And I remember looking at the doctor and going, so what's next? Do we do any more testing? Like, are we going to talk about abortion or terminating? And he's like, well, no, not really. He's like, we just have to wait and see what's going to come next. Because at 20 weeks, she wasn't viable. And this issue was not going to, there's no treatment for it. There's no way to help it. There's nothing they can do. And at 20 weeks, there's nothing they can do to help that baby. There's no drugs you can take. The steroids can't help that yet. And so it's just a wait and see. And so he's like, well, we just have to wait and see. And there's a lot of conversations about, well, what if she passes away and I would still have to give birth? Like at 20 weeks, if your baby passes away, you give birth. So it was this very daunting task. So he said, we have to see next week. And he prepared us for a stillbirth or a very premature baby. And luckily at the next appointment, she was stable. It wasn't good, but she was stable. And we ended up coming back the next week. We came at 22 weeks and 6 days. At 22 weeks and 6 days, they said, okay, we'll admit you because we can intervene at 22 and 6. That's when we can maybe save this baby. And it really was a question of, can we intubate or can we not intubate? And so for us, we chose to do everything we could. But the risks were really high. There was a big risk to my health. They were very concerned that I would get preeclampsia. I didn't have it yet. I think probably because my blood pressure runs low to start, I actually had more reserve. I had more space to go up because towards the end of pregnancy, I've looked at all the paperwork at this point and my blood pressure was climbing. So I think if I had had a more normal blood pressure to start, I would have hit preeclampsia status faster. I got to 26 weeks with her. She was delivered. She was very, very teeny. She was 13.5 ounces. And they got her intubated with the smallest tube that they have. They said she was the size of a 22-weeker. One of the smallest babies they've ever treated there. And they got her intubated and she was alive and she went to NICU. Unfortunately, she had very little reserve. So 24 hours hit, the adrenaline from birth, babies get a jump of adrenaline when they're born. And the adrenaline from birth wore off and her lungs and heart were just too small and she passed away. In hindsight, there's part of me that wishes, like there's times where I go, I wish I had just terminated or delivered her earlier. And really that's what it came down to. Should we intervene? What should we do? And by intervening, by giving the steroids, by giving the lung treatments, I was hospitalized for a month. By being in the hospital, she still lived, but she was struggling that entire time. She was probably experiencing pain that entire time. And so there is part of me that wishes I hadn't done that. And it's hindsight is this tricky thing because we thought she was going to live. And if she had lived, it would have been worth it. But she didn't. And so her whole life, she struggled and she fought and she experienced discomfort. So that's really a hard thing to know.
Was there any chance that she could live? Is that what you were thinking?
There was a chance she could live. If she had been a little bigger, she would have lived. Though I think realistically in her case, there was never a chance she was going to live, but we didn't know that. Doctors didn't know that. We didn't know that. With the placenta, if it's too small, there's actually a really good website called Measure the Placenta that talks about this. There's a doctor named Harvey Kleiman who specializes in it. And it's basically like it's the engine in your car. And he explained it as she had a lawnmower engine in like a muscle car. You're going to burn your engine out and then your car's not going to run. So for her, she couldn't get big enough to survive. And if she had gotten big enough to survive, placenta would have died and she would have died. So like there was this, she only lived because she was so little. She also only died because she was so little. I don't think she herself could have ever lived. I've talked to so many people after this, and one of the OBs had said, rarely, it is like very, very rare for someone with this particular condition. And like I said, it doesn't really have a name, but it's very, very rare for somebody with this condition to survive past birth. It just isn't a thing. And it's honestly, quite frankly, a miracle that she made it to birth. Every time we saw the MFM, he was like, I can't believe she's doing so well.
What's the MFM?
Yeah, maternal fetal medicine doctor.
Okay.
So
okay.
Whenever you have a high risk pregnancy, you see a maternal fetal medicine doctor.
Okay.
There are sometimes the ones who can't operate on a baby in utero. They just do extra specialty things. And they're the ones who decide in or out.
So you got to hold her.
I did. I got to hold her. I got to see her the night she was born, because at that point, they still thought she might survive. She was intubated. And she was doing okay. Okay for microbreathing. It's a different kind of world. But... and then the next day, I had gone down to see her, and she had been doing well. And the first time I went down to see her after the next day. So like they wheeled me in my recovery bed to see her the night of. And then the next morning, I went down in a wheelchair with my nurse. And at that time, because of COVID, it was one person at a time. So it's just me and the nurses. She crashed, and her oxygen levels went very far down. Her heart rate went down. And because of my son having as many medical issues as he did, I kind of knew it wasn't great. You really can't have oxygen in the 20s and be doing well. But I was hopeful that I didn't know preemies well enough that maybe it would be okay. And she finally settled, and Dan had rushed back, and they let him in with me because she was, at that point, we thought she was dying right then. And so they let him in. And I still hadn't held her at that point, because if she was going to live, you don't get to hold the baby because they're too fragile. They can't handle the touch.
Okay.
But then we went back up to my room to give her some time to react. Their nervous systems are so sensitive that if you want to give them a chance, little light, little sound, you want them to be calm. And so we went back to the room to let her calm down. And then we got the call and had to run down there. And then they let us hold her as they bagged her. And she actually, we had to make the call to tell them to stop bagging. It was quite awful because they were still trying to do, they were trying to give her night tricks and like all these different little tricks, give her some blood products to just get her through. Because if you can just get her through past this and get her stable, you have a fighting chance. There were at the whole time through this out. Throughout this time, they had been telling us head to toe all the things that could go wrong with her. Like it was, the list was numerous. It was everything could go wrong. But they were trying all these things to get her to just hang on so we could fight another day. And they just weren't working. So as they're bagging her, I think Dan, my husband, I kind of whispered to them, give her all the drugs to make her comfortable. And like, they just kept bagging her as we held her, and her heart stopped first. And then we're like, yeah, you got to stop bagging. Like at that point, we just have to stop. Like there's nothing left to do.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah.
But that's not the end.
No. So then after this pregnancy, I was told that I could try again. But anytime I would get pregnant in the future, I would have a 25% reoccurrence of this happening. 25% chance in the medical world is huge. That feels like almost a sure thing. It's not, but like it feels very high because it is. Like I have a 1 in 100 chance in having another child with Down syndrome, and that's elevated risk. People over 35 have a 1 in 100, and you always hear your high-risk pregnancy. That's what it means. So I have a 1 in 4 chance of having another child with this placenta issue. That's astronomical. And the concern, so one of my, I actually ended up having 2 MFMs. The interesting story with them is that they're married. They're wonderful people. The female MFM, she was worried that I shouldn't try because she was very concerned that this would happen again and I'd get really bad preeclampsia and my life would be in danger. Her husband, because I didn't get preeclampsia with my daughter Emerson, he was okay with me trying again. But regardless, if I tried again, it was going to be very high risk and I would need to be monitored. For me at that time, Roe v. Wade was still in place and I decided to try again. I needed to for myself. And I talked to my husband about it and he didn't really want me to try again. He was very nervous about happening again. He was worried about my health. And we have a child who has a disability who needs me around. And it was kind of the decision was made that if we tried again and my life was in danger, we would terminate because I can't die and not be there for my son. I'm his caregiver. I'm the one who arranges all his appointments. Could my husband do it? Sure. But the level of things I do is a lot different than anybody else can do. And also, I'm just his mom. Like, he needs his mom around.
Just his mom. You're his mom.
Yeah. So we did try again, and I did get pregnant. I was very high risk. So throughout the entire time, I had a lot of monitoring. But I was only able to try again because I had the option to terminate if my life went into danger. And I think if she had had the same issue, I probably would have terminated, knowing that almost guaranteed she wouldn't live and she would suffer. I don't think I could do that again where I put somebody in that or another baby in that position. Luckily, she did not have that issue. She survived. But I did get preeclampsia. I got preeclampsia at 38 weeks, and luckily it's 38, so it was very safe to deliver, and she was huge. I had all these teeny tiny babies, and then I had a 9-pound baby.
Oh, wow.
She's healthy and happy, and I had postpartum preeclampsia. I actually had very bad preeclampsia. I had a stroke scare. I had to take some of what people call the abortion pill because I have retained placenta. So, and again, if we don't have access to these pills, I have retained placenta, I can get a postpartum. It's not even about having a baby at that point. I have retained placenta. I got to get that out or I'm going to get an infection and I can die. So it's just, I've definitely used all of these things that are being legislated as if they're a moral choice, and they're not. They're health care.
So that's when I met you. It was after your daughter was born.
Yeah.
What is her name now?
Her name is Cecilia. CC for short.
CC. Yeah.
And CC fits her perfectly. She's a little tornado.
And I remember you. It was shortly after Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Yeah,
and it was. You were so depressed because that was going to affect you.
Yeah. And I think for me, it doesn't directly impact me in the sense of I don't think I will have any more children. It's just too high of a risk. And I think we are okay with being done at two. But it's just the choice is taken away from me because I can't, in a world where I can't get all the healthcare I need, not every healthcare option is available. I can't make the risky choice to have another pregnancy. And so instead of me and my doctor and my FMFM, so I talked to, and my husband, instead of all of these conversations and thoughtful planning that I had done with my other pregnancies, a legislator made this choice for me. They took it right out of my hands and said, well, you can't have access to parts of the healthcare that could save your life.
Or your child's
life. Yeah, or my child's life.
Wow. Wow. That is incredibly details that I think sharing your story can help people understand how important it
is. You don't hear that. People don't talk about, well, this person had this health care to save their life, or they had this health care after they had the baby. They had to have, people have to have DNCs after pregnancy. They'll have the baby and they'll have this retained placenta and it doesn't come out with the men. So then they have to have a DNC after. So it's not always about a baby. It's just sometimes your uterus has things in it that need to be gone.
So we have news to share as we do this podcast.
Yes.
It was a great day for us to come back together because, first of all, I want to say this, Sarah, that after I met you and heard your story, it really made me glad I was running and that you had a voice had I won that election for a woman's right to privacy and a woman's right to access health care. So it was great timing that I was in the race and could carry stories like yours and others I heard at the doors on toward hopefully getting things overturned. So today, tell us what you heard, how you heard it. So and then what did it
today
feel
like? I saw on social media that Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin, both in Milwaukee and in Dean County, are resuming their abortion services. And they are doing this because there was a court case in Dean County that said as soon as Roe v. Wade was overturned, they made abortion illegal because of an 1857 law, which blows my mind. 1857, that's a very long time ago. But Dean County had a court case and they determined that that is not a court case that can be used to determine the legality of abortion in Wisconsin. So Planned Parenthood now has abortion services.
On a Wire podcast will be right back after this. To listen to this and more uninterrupted, listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief, striking auto workers say they need a big raise, just like the big three CEOs have gotten. UAW President Sean Fain on CBS's Face the Nation.
The billionaire class keeps taking more and more, and the working class keeps getting left behind.
A new CBS News poll has bad news on the economy for President Biden. CBS News Deputy Director of Surveys, Jennifer DePinto.
Nearly half of voters and most independents say they are worse off financially than before the COVID pandemic, far more than, say, better off. And this is not helping Biden. Three quarters of independents who feel they are financially worse off are backing Trump over Biden.
After flooding in Derna, Libya killed at least 11,000 people this week, officials say people left in the town need help dealing with the trauma the disaster inflicted. Eastern Libya's health minister, Othman Abdul Jalil.
For the mental health issue, which is very important, we really need help.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The city of Waukesha is delaying the start of Lake Michigan water delivery to homes until October 9th. That's due to additional preparations that are required. The transition shifts the supply from underground water wells that don't meet radium standards and replaces it with Lake Michigan water supplied by Milwaukee. Officials say the delay is necessary to conduct tests, flush reservoirs, and address programming issues with water pumps. The transition, once it happens, will take several weeks and may result in temporary water discoloration in some areas. A postal truck was stolen during an armed robbery yesterday in Milwaukee. A 53-year-old postal worker involved was not injured during the incident. The stolen mail truck was taken at around 5:30 and was found about 2.5 hours later, about 4 miles away. There, a 37-year-old was arrested. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weikert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weikert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weikert-lakepoint.com.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about 5 minutes.
It was like a
week.
Everyone was excited and then they moved on.
Well, it was like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
He opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's joking how. Everybody's joking now.
Devek.
Ramaswamy.
Cease and desist. Who would be worse? Mike Pence. I mean, Ron DeSantis trying to rap also would be wildly cringy.
Ron DeSantis trying to feel feelings is weird enough. I couldn't imagine him rapping.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
Hopefully you can go to your OBs at any of your clinics, and you can go and get the healthcare you need. Because I did hear of a woman who had a miscarriage, like I did with my first pregnancy, who went to her OB at one of the major hospitals and was told, well, your dates might be wrong, so we can't do anything, and you're just going to have to wait. And she had already been waiting, and she just wanted to be, when you have a miscarriage, like you don't want to carry around a dead baby in your room. Like that's how it feels. You don't want to do that. You just want to be done and be able to start healing and grieving. And she was told she had to wait and she couldn't get the healthcare she needed. And people, when she went to people for advice, the advice was, well, go down to Illinois or go to Minnesota. And that's just outrageous. That's outrageous that her regular doctor couldn't help her.
And it's great that today forward, or I think it starts on Monday.
Yeah, that so we can get it here in our community.
Planned Parenthood. And like you said, I hope others follow suit.
Yeah.
Because women should have that right.
Women should get to decide what to do with their own bodies.
Right. And family planning, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the reality is a legislator is not a doctor. They're not in that office having those conversations. They're not holding my hand as I cry because my baby has a basically terminal diagnosis. They shouldn't be a part of that conversation. They have no idea what they are talking about.
Well, we still have a long ways to go because there are still some very strict policies in place, even if we go back to having access. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. And with the change in the Supreme Court race, does that give you hope?
I think it does. I think there's been a few things that have happened recently that have given me that little sliver of hope that we're starting to change the tides. I think that probably for several years now, I think probably since about right before my son was born in 2016 on, there's just been that like level of anxiety and hopelessness and feeling like even though I'm fighting and marching and shouting my story, that it's not making the impact that I wish it did. And so I think there's a little glimmer of hope that we're getting there.
Oh, yeah. Especially after today, I thought that was...
Yes, that was...
I was so glad you were coming over today. Yeah. Because you really impacted my life when I was over there. And I met Monty and Cece.
Yeah.
And then again, I went back when we were trying to get Chris Porterfield elected for school board. and Janet elected to the Supreme Court. So I kind of have my friends now in the district that, you know, once we connect around these values and these things we care about, it's important in my life to keep working towards them. And I know that you are committed to that.
Well, I think for a long time, a lot of us just like we were. There's been so much like survival in people's lives for so long that like you don't necessarily look outside of yourself. And when you have the Republican side being very organized and deciding, we'll put away our differences on A, B, and C, and we'll come together on abortion rights, or we'll come together on immigration, and we'll just fight that, we'll fight dirty, and we'll do whatever it takes, well, then we lose. So I think it's time that we stand up and we organize and we make sure that we come together, and we have to put aside some of the little differences to make sure that we can get these big issues taken care of.
You know, for our listeners out there, I hope that Sarah's story gives you an idea of what some women have go through with their family planning. It's not as black and white as some people make it out to be. There are other women that for other reasons need an abortion. It might be failed birth control. It might be, you know, accidental. They didn't, you know, plan it. It might be, there could be a number of reasons why.
Well, and you just don't know. If you haven't walked in someone's shoes, you don't know. I think there's a lot of privilege in this idea of if you've only had a planned pregnancy or you've never had a pregnancy, if you have a uterus and your ability, like, there's a privilege in that. I would say that most people at one point in their time maybe have made choices that they're like, oh, that was a mistake. Well, sometimes that's all it takes is one little mistake and you have an unplanned pregnancy. Or maybe the deck is stacked against you from the day you're born and you don't have the resources and the support systems. And you just don't know. And to make decisions on people's life when you just don't understand their life.
Right. Why?
And it doesn't affect you.
Right. So I'm so glad that we're seeing some changes. The other very touching part about your story, Sarah, is, you know, you're committed to your children. And I think that's another thing people don't realize about a mom, a mother who has to make these choices. Are they doing it for themselves? I never once heard that for you, only in the context of, well, I had to make that choice because I want to be alive for my child.
Right.
And all your other comments were, you know, I want to do what's best for my child,
right,
my baby.
Right.
Not for me,
right,
particularly.
Well, I think that's this big misconception is people, I think part of the reason I was as depressed as I was when I met you is because we were in the midst of this conversation and lost moms were being attacked over and over again. And I use the term lost moms because a lot of people who have abortion, I would actually argue all people who have abortions are lost moms because there is some nuances to that as well. But I've met lost moms who were pregnant and their baby was dying inside their body. And so they chose to, they call it terminating for medical reasons or TFMR, but they made that choice. That choice is horrible to make. They grieve the same way I grieve. They think about that the same way that I think about it. And I just, to have them villainized, to be called murderers, people were calling them murderers and were saying the most awful things. And then people, even my son, like when you talk about disabilities, the things that they say, and it's just horrific the way that people are vilified over these choices when you don't know. And these people who are like my lifeline, who kept me alive after my first miscarriage, who paid for me to be able to find out the answer so I could conceive and have CC, they embraced me and were my community, and they're being vilified. And it every time it made me sick to my stomach. Like, and I lost sleep over it. There were definitely times where I didn't feel like I could eat over it because the things people said, these are people. Like this isn't just a moral argument. You're talking about people and you're talking about deeply personal, painful parts of their story. There is no one who goes wakes up one morning and says, oh, I want to go get pregnant so I can have an abortion. Like, that doesn't happen. These aren't choices people want to make.
Not for that purpose. They're not doing that. They're not. Also, you said, lost that train of thought. I mean, you said it very clearly that women are not out to do that. So you were describing to me, you know, that was a difficult time for you. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, by sharing our stories, this is how we get to change things. So now Sarah and I came together this week, which when we look back at that time, what made you feel better, by the way? You were depressed that day I came to your door the first time. What got you out of that?
So for me, I probably was still very early on in my grieving process, really, because 2020 was probably one of the worst years of my life, and I've had a very hard life. That sounds weird to say it out loud, but my story is very wide and vast and has lots of things that happened.
Like
most of us.
Sharing a little bit about
that? I grew up in foster care. My parents are drug addicts. I've been in abusive households. I am a survivor of rape, which I could have been pregnant after that, but luckily was not. And I just, there's been a lot of things that have happened in my life that are very, very difficult, and a lot of trauma. I have complex PTSD. I have anxiety. And after my daughter died, I had my son who was living that I was still taking care of. And I made the choice that I was like, I have to be a good mom for him. And I know I cannot survive this if I don't get help. So I went to a therapist and I'm on an antidepressant. And I've done lots and lots of therapy. My brother passed away shortly after my daughter. So that was very, very difficult. He had cancer. He died 3 months after my daughter. He was dying when I had my daughter. And then I got pregnant three weeks after my brother died. My Cece was the only baby. I didn't struggle to conceive, and I got pregnant right away. And I was very sick with that pregnancy. And then COVID hit. Well, yeah. COVID had already been going on. COVID was just very depressing for everybody. Very isolated.
It was.
So all this is happening during COVID, and then I'm pregnant. And so when I was pregnant with my daughter, Cece, I really couldn't grieve. I knew I couldn't grieve. My therapist knew I couldn't grieve. Like, it was survival mode. So when you met me, it was after I had my daughter, and I was really starting to actually grieve. So it's just taken time. My daughter is now almost two. And so it's been like over a year since I met you. And it's been the process of time talking about my story, being open about my story. I really made the decision that when my daughter Emerson died, I decided I wasn't going to just be quiet anymore. And there, like, I had a different mindset. I wasn't going to accept nonsense anymore. Like, I just couldn't do it. I had little tolerance for it. Because I didn't have space. When you're grieving something that big, you just don't have space for extra noise. And so everything in my life, like, I had been volunteering in before my daughter was born, everything had to like shut down, and I had to focus on caring for my family and myself. And then as I opened back up, I got to choose what I would allow and wouldn't allow. And I decided I was going to protect my peace, and I wasn't going to tolerate any of that nonsense. I wasn't going to allow anybody in my circle to be bigoted or racist or continue to talk about lost moms that way. And so I just have been sharing my story and loud and working on healing. And so, yeah.
And being a voice for other people by sharing your story. I know you, Sarah. It's not about you. It's about, we need to get people to understand these issues a little bit more. Now, most recently, you put up a little house.
Yes.
On your yard, a little book thing.
So
tell me about that, because that had some healing significance.
Yes, it did. Yeah. So it was Emerson's third birthday this year. It's a little difficult, like, when you talk about it, because it's like, it would have been our third birthday. It is her third birthday. But it was her third birthday this August. And I usually all my kids, because of the childhood I had, I never had birthday parties. I wasn't really celebrated because of the abuse and substance abuse. We kind of hid in our family, so I never had friends over or anything like that. And so for me, for my children, it's very important to celebrate their birthdays. It's really important to go big and have parties. And so that's been a hard part with Emerson, is what do I do? And so for a first birthday, I had a big party. For a second birthday, I don't think we did much. I think I was just in pure survival mode with a one-year-old. And then this third birthday was actually really hard for me. I don't know why this one hit hard. It just did. But I decided I wanted to do a little free library because I really wanted to do something that would have an impact. And it's very important for me. It's always been important for me to somehow like make a lasting mark on the world and change the world. It's why I became a teacher. It's just so many of the pieces of who I am. I really want to make a difference in this world. I do a lot of advocating in the disability community, and it's all part of that. And it's part of like my moral compass is that I want to make an impact on the world and make the world a better place. And I wanted my children to. So Emerson isn't living. And something I always say is that I still have to parent her. When you have a baby who dies, you still parent them. You just parent them in a different way. You parent their memory. And so for me, I wanted something that was physical. Some people plant trees. I kill plants, so that wasn't going to work. So I wanted to make this library. And when I made this library, I was determined to make it an inclusive library. So I wanted it to have books that were LGBTQ friendly, by diverse authors, BIPOC, just all communities. I wanted them to be represented, make sure there was some books by marginalized authors and featuring them, and I wanted stories and like stories that were inspiring. So that was really important to me. So I figured out how to build it. That was a whole process. I've never built something from scratch without a kit before, and we did it. Please don't criticize it because it's not perfect. But it turned out really beautiful, and I painted it in rainbows on the side. And then the back, I still haven't figured out what I'm doing completely on the back of it. There's going to be more of something on there for her because the back is Emerson's side. And then I registered it with the Little Free Library, and it has a Facebook page, Emerson's Free Little Library.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and I just wanted to do something that really like was physical.
Oh, there. You're such a good example of how you turn things around and reach out to other people, you know, based on your experience. And I had a rough childhood as well. And it's really interesting how you run into things, and you know, today that all of a sudden bring back that memory, mm-hmm. and you know, because you've been there,
yeah,
and you know what it feels like. So yeah. You reach out, and I think we should pay attention to that feeling, because part of that is this action piece to me. I mean, we can't all solve every problem in the world, but there's something you right. know, right, and right. you hear about. By the way, you mentioned the term lost mom. What's a lost mom?
So a lost mom is just a mom who has had a baby. Or a miscarriage, or a stillbirth, or a neonatal loss. It's any mom who has lost a child in any form. And in the lost mom community, most of us recognize that it doesn't matter when it happens. Like, it could be a chemical pregnancy. Which a chemical pregnancy is, you just bear, like, you can turn a positive test, but you have a period like miscarriage before there would ever be any sign of pregnancy beyond the pregnancy test. That's a chemical pregnancy.
Okay.
And then there's all types of losses along the way. And like, even like if you had a surrogate and they lost a child, you'd still be a lost mom. Sometimes when an adoption fails, they're considered a lost mom. Well, and it just depends, because it's like you still grieve. Grieve. And it's a very unique type of grieving when you grieve somebody who didn't fully exist per se. Like, they existed, but like you didn't get to learn what they liked or what they didn't like. You didn't get to hear their voice or see their eyes. You didn't get to see them walk and grow up. Like, it's a different kind of pain. And so it's just a very unique thing. And
I remember my sister-in-law had at about 6 months, her, for whatever reason, her baby stopped living in the womb.
Yeah.
And she was far enough along. She had to carry it to term. And she, I just remember watching the pain. And she said, Lou, I took a shower today. I really didn't need to have any water on. You know, she's just, it's very, these are difficult stories to tell. And she,
and the
same thing, you know, with it, put out a headstone for little Daniel Paul and named him. And, you know, people don't understand how hard this can be for women. So it's great that you would come on and tell your story. Now, so we connected this week. There was, tell us.
That was actually a really hopeful moment, too. I think that was the first time in, like, recent time that I would, like, really was. Last Friday, our district, our school board, released their notice for their meeting on Monday. And in the notice, there was an agenda item about gender identity. And I went and read this gender identity notice. And it said, it was from this organization, Wisconsin
Institute for Law and Liberty.
Yeah. Which is a well-known right-wing conservative PAC.
Yeah.
That just, they do a lot of very harmful things in this state.
Yeah.
And the entire thing basically said you couldn't call a student by their preferred name or pronoun without signed permission from their parent, which means you're outing students. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You're outing a student. And then it also had an additional statement that if you think they may be considering transitioning, you may tell parents. It didn't say you had to, but that part went, but still. And I saw that and my heart dropped. Because in our school district, recently, our votes have been going 4-3 conservatively on issues. And there seems to be a group of four that like to vote together on everything. And so I really thought this was going to get passed. And it said a possible action. And it was
discussion and possible action.
And it came out of nowhere. And Friday for the Monday meeting. And it came out of nowhere. I'm like, did I miss something? Was I not paying attention? And as time's going on, I'm like,
they didn't do that. It was one board member.
It was one board
member. Asked the board president to put it on the agenda, and he did.
Yeah, we should say that. It was one person. Yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised. It ended up not going the way I expected at all. One of the board members who I had kind of counted out surprised me and stood strong and eloquent on the fact that she would not stand for this kind of policy. And I was really, really happily surprised to see that every single person who was in there who spoke publicly spoke against this policy and were very vocal, passionate, not going to tolerate this. And there were staff members I had spoken to, which I will not name, who also are very vocally or who are very opposed to it. And unheard of to me is how many of those staff members emailed the board, because I was a teacher. I would never. It's so dangerous to email boards like that on issues like this, especially when you have a majority that have been voting a certain way. Mm-hmm. It really feels like you're putting your job and your family's livelihood on the line to do that. So the fact that so many of them stood up for our students and so many people came out and stood up for our students, and there were some written statements that were very transphobic that were spoken out loud, which was disappointing, but...
Mm-hmm. Sarah alerted me so that I could go.
Yeah.
And then I alerted a couple of my friends so that they could go. And word got around pretty quickly. And I even got a text today. So for now, we have been able, it was such a good feeling to know that the community came out.
Mm-hmm.
And inclusion is what this community is.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry. Auto Glass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Auto Glass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Auto Glass Now today for full details.
Innovation Refunds does not provide tax or legal advice. We work with an independent network of tax professionals and will share information with them to evaluate and process your claims. Terms and conditions apply. Ty is a paid spokesman.
I'm Ty Burrell, actor and small business owner. You can trust Innovation Refunds with your small business's ERC claim because of their SOC 2 Type 1 security compliance. Without this, how can you be sure a company can protect your information? It's not like here on the radio, where all you need to be secure is a sensor button. My password to my bank account is Ty's Cool Password 1. Uh-oh. Luckily, Innovation Refunds is more reliable. Go to InnovationRefunds.com or call 1-843-REFUNDS to get started.